Welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Earth? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! You're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron, your number one source for theories, news and discussion, and interviews from the books and the films like me, the Rupert Grimm. I play Ron Weasley in the Harry Potter films. And now your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Welcome guys, it's Pottercast number 116. I'm Melissa, I'm here with John and Sue, and we are in for yet another week of exciting discussions, theories and more on your favorite Harry Potter podcast. This week, as always, we have to check in with our friends at Borders.
Sweet, I love our friends at Borders. Today's Pottercast is brought to you by Borders. Haven't read Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows yet? Don't worry, Borders is here to help. Pick up your copy of this summer's smash hit soon. You won't be able to hide from the spoilers forever. You can count on Borders to have it in stock and ready to take home tonight, along with the audiobook version. Even if you've read the book, the Harry Potter fun doesn't have to end yet. Visit BordersMedia.com or click the Borders banner at the top of the Pottercast page to find out more.
Awesome. Well, okay, in this week's show, we have lots of, well, sort of lots of, since Deathly Hallows, lots of is a relative term.
Yeah.
But fun news to discuss. Our next Phoenix Files, we'll discuss Harry going over to the Ministry and his trial there at the Ministry. Our Canon Conundrums, what's Canon Conundrums about this week, guys?
It was a pretty cool Canon Conundrums, wasn't it, Sue?
It was. Why didn't Harry die in the forest?
Oh, boy.
Why?
Yes, because we know definitively because we were there when she wrote it.
Yes.
Except we don't, and we're totally just hoping we're right.
I wasn't part of this one, and I have a feeling when I listen to it, I'm going to be screaming at the audio like everybody else.
Oh, come on. We weren't that far off.
I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that when you're, it sounds like such a juicy topic of conversation that your own ideas, you know, already I want to say things. But.
Yeah. You know, it really was, and it was a good conversation, and it's surprising. I keep saying this over and over, but every time we go and we talk about these things, and then you end up with something else, and it's just amazing that Joe was...
Totally. We wanted you to be there if your darn cat wouldn't attack everybody. We told everybody...
I had an infection in my ear.
No, we told everybody Mucha had attacked a neighbor and you had to help do the first aid.
I'm so glad you're there to cover for me.
me. Good old reliable
really?
John here.
Wonderful.
And he's telling tall tales about your poor cat.
My poor ear,
cat.
Okay?
Aww.
I said in my email, I'd rather have cut off my ear than put on earphones.
Well, you were fine the next day. It was a quick ear infection, wasn't it?
I have medicine. Medicine is good. Okay, moving on. We have Scribby 5 in this week's show, and it's awesome, as per usual. So I think I want to hear from Sue what's happening in this week's Harry Potter news.
Yes.
Well, there is some, and I think this is good because we have some new segments, and let's talk about movies now because we're finally starting to hear a little bit about the movies, and that Helena Bonham Carter is going to reprise her role as Bellatrix Lestrange, and she's going to film in the spring because right now she's pregnant with her child. But that means the Spinner's End scene is going to be in, everyone.
Which one?
Unless...
So which scene?
Unless it just means that she's in the battle at the end.
No, don't say
that.
Wait, now, what scene are you talking about this guy?
Helena Bonham Carter. Spinner's End, John.
Oh, hell, Spinner's End. Jesus,
that's
the coolest one ever.
They had to do Spinner's End just to get that visual of the fiery snake, the unbreakable vow.
And I just want to see Snape sitting there with, like, his leg up and the glass of wine swishing around. And that'd be so freaking hilarious. But if that scene is not in, if I don't sit down to that movie, if I don't sit down to that movie and that's not one of the first things that comes up, I'm leaving right there.
Right.
I'm going
to
be
that's
all
I'll
hold
you to that in October or November, whenever it comes out.
Yeah.
November.
Yeah, right.
November, a year and change away. Oh.
There's no way they can put that in.
Well, they have to have it in there. I mean, it just sets the whole tone for the book and the whole movie, I would think. I just was glad to see that it's going to be coming back. Because, you know, I could see them easily writing her part out, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. And other film kind of related news. The first of the deleted scenes was posted on the British Board of Film Classification website. And we're getting only about 10 minutes of deleted scenes. And they don't look very good from order.
No, that's all.
Well, okay.
I mean, like, let's talk about these names.
Cool.
Yeah, I've heard David Yates talk about this before, and apparently, while they were filming Umbridge's scene where she speaks to the Great Hall, they filmed for like 30 seconds or a minute or maybe even 10 minutes Emma Thompson doing this like Charlie Chaplin routine with her food, like the silent, like trying to corral her food on her plate, and she kept in that kooky Trelawney way and couldn't do it and dropping things. And so they said that it was just so great that they had to they couldn't use it in the film, but they had to put some of it in.
Well, there's a clip of her, you know, there's a cut to her in the film when she's eating something.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just real quick. But, I mean, I just when I saw that, I thought, now why are they going to show more of her eating? But the way you described it, that sounds awesome because she's so brilliant. I thought it was just
hysterical. She's such a great physical actress. And then look at the timings on these clips. It's almost twice the length of any other deleted scene. Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's one of the longest deleted scenes. It's 2 minutes and 31 seconds, which is huge for a deleted scene.
It's 2 minutes long for her eating?
Yeah. Two minutes and a half.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. That's a long scene. And speaking of, that could be funny, though. I mean, because she's just a genius actress.
Sure.
And, you know, so, and then speaking, there is another scene, though, with her and Umbridge. It's the Umbridge questions Trelawney, which is a scene I had been hoping for, you know. And so that's kind of
Okay. Well, here are the rest of the titles in case you've missed them.
Okay.
Neville speaks up for Harry. Steady cam around, which apparently is just a scenic shot of the camera.
I cannot wait for that. I love steady cam shots.
I wanted an HD.
Maybe it's in 3D, too. Maybe they have it for the IMAX.
Oh, that would be kind of cool.
IMAX ever.
Like random.
you think I'm kidding, but I'd love to see Hogwarts in 3D.
I know.
I would, too.
Yeah. Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle bully a student.
Jerks.
Yay for Crabbe. We didn't get to see him that much, our friend
Jamie.
We'll
get to see him in 7, won't we?
He's a good Crabby Crabbe.
Yeah, that's right. He's got a good...
Filch blows on Umbridge's hair.
Well, that sounded dirty for a second.
No, we saw a photo. We saw like a bunch of stills before, you know, that whole, we got so many photos before the movie came out. And there was a scene that looked like Umbridge's hair was on fire.
Okay.
She comes out on fire.
Like a firework or something. Yeah. So I'm thinking that's probably.
That wasn't a romantic scene.
Not some. No.
That's no wonder it was deleted.
I wasn't going to say that either of you. Thank you.
That's not a very popular ship, I don't think, is it?
Oh, my. No, I think it's probably a very popular ship.
Oh, he's such a grumpy old man, though.
All right, the next one is Harry, Hermione, and Umbridge extended, so it looks like just more forest stuff.
Yeah.
Harry enters. Don't know where he enters, but Harry enters. And then Harry and Ron packing. What else is going on in this news?
Mr. Dan Radcliffe has been promoting his new film, December Boys, which actually opens on September 14th. But he's here doing a whole slew of mass media interviews and stuff. And he says that he actually confirmed that those rumors of them bringing Equus over to Broadway are true. And it looks it's very, very hopeful. And he wants to reprise his role in the stage play. And Richard Griffiths would appear with him.
Wow.
Well, of course he's going to come along. What else is he going to do?
Mr. Richard Griffiths is a very acclaimed stage actor.
Oh, I know. He's an incredibly great actor. But I'm saying if Dan Radcliffe can, you know, be ours to go over there, I'm sure he could, too. That's all I'm saying.
Our resident theater critic. Thank you, John.
Well, no, it's great. It's, you know, it's... hey.
Sorry.
Resident theater critic. That was great.
Well, I think Dan will be good. He said in a bunch of interviews, like, one, he thinks it might be in the fall because there's this filming for Half Blood Prince is going to take, you know.
Yeah. How can he? Seriously, let's think about this. How can he come over into Equus? What are they thinking about bringing Equus here?
Well, at first they had it at spring, but it's going to have to be until, he said later in more recent interviews that it would be in the fall.
Yeah.
And it has to be. I mean, just.
It has to be. And it has to be, and he can't be in it in the 4 to 5 weeks leading up to Half-Blood Prince because he has to be busy doing press.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know how they'd make that happen.
I think it would have to after, you know, because the movie, Half-Blood Prince is scheduled for release, I believe, on November 21st, which is Thanksgiving weekend of next year here in the United States. So I would think they would want to either try and launch it after that, you know, if they were smart, because there's no, like you said, that's just... That whole month.
And then there's the Christmas season, so maybe.
I'm sure I'll be hearing more about that soon.
That's a great Christmas show.
You put in that real festive mood.
No.
And there's just one more thing I want to talk about. There's another rumor, too, about a new director of photography for the movie, and his name is Bruno Del Bonel. Does someone help me pronounce it? I don't know. He's a French cinematographer.
No idea.
I can't
but he's done some really good movies. And he's doing one that I think is kind of good. It's the one that Julie Taymor's doing, the Across the Universe, kind of the Beatles. And, you know, she's so brilliant. She staged The Lion King, right? On Broadway?
Titus Andronicus from The Lion King.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's pretty good, so. But that's it.
Well, now what happens to Stuart? I thought Stuart Craig was...
Well, Stuart Craig is art direction. It's a different
job.
Yes,
I know, but he's been director of photography in the past, hasn't he?
Yeah, but the last one they had, that shot Black Hawk Down, who's really, really good. But I think that they're going for... That tells me that they're bringing in a new cinematographer means they're going for a different look, like the cave scene. Might be a lot more very, a lot more...
Good.
I don't know. What's the word to describe? More spooky?
Production designer, not director of photography. I'm sorry. Yeah. Stuart Craig was...
That's okay.
I'm sorry. No. I'm losing my mind. Yeah, but it sounds interesting.
Stuart Craig.
I hate you.
All right. Well, I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to start talking about Order of the Phoenix again.
I'm excited about Phoenix.
That was one hell of a cool movie.
Sure. Let's keep doing it.
All right.
Don't put your wand there, boy. What if it ignited? Better wizards than you have lost buttocks, you know.
Okay, it's Phoenix Files number 2.
Ooh.
Number 2 is all? It's our 115th Phoenix Files, boys and girls.
Excellent. The movie's been out for 115 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
It's worse than The Sound of Music. It's the movie that will never end. It's the Phoenix movie.
What are we talking about this week?
Well, we left off talking about how much you guys hated Petunia's sundress.
Oh, wretched. Horrible.
Which is just so cruel and uncalled for. I thought it was a beautiful dress.
No.
But that leaves us with the Dursleys.
Mm-hmm.
And we mentioned how, yada, 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 Vernon didn't seem too angry enough. And
yeah.
The owl only came once and blah, blah, blah. But pretty cool scene. Good to see the Dursleys again, even if it was just for like a minute or two. It's not that they still exist. But then we come, and Harry finds himself rescued from the Order, or at least a sampling of the Order.
That's right.
Who is missing?
It would be Remus.
Remus, was anybody else missing, or is that just him?
Just him.
Did he, like, have a dance appointment or something that day? Did he not make the set?
They had Kingsley, right. Moody, and Tonks, and nobody else was really named. You assume that somebody's Emily's Vance. You assume that somebody is,
right.
You know, whoever.
Yeah.
Settler right. Stiggle.
I mean, really, where was he that day? It's not like he wasn't cast for the whole film.
It was terrible.
I didn't care. I'll say it. I don't care.
Well,
no, I mean, these aren't really big, you know, oh, that ruined the whole scene for me moments. It's just kind of like head-scratchers, because you know the guy... probably could have been sitting in his trailer on Leafston that day, for all we know.
Right.
And he just wasn't on set. They didn't include him in the scene.
Well, my thing is that I'm a David Poulos fan, and I think he's a good actor, and I think he lends a certain, I don't know, gravity.
Je ne sais
quoi. Yes, thank you very much. That's exactly what he does.
A certain
he
what?
He does. He has
je ne sais quoi.
Yeah.
You can't just say je ne sais quoi. You have to say je ne sais quoi.
I have no idea what that means.
Certain something in French.
Yeah, like a personality, a certain air, a certain elegance to me. I've seen, I really enjoy his acting. And I just think it would have been nice to have him there because we hadn't really seen him since, you know, movie 3. And then suddenly he's there and, you know, later on. But I don't know. People liked it that it was Lupin, that the kind of attachment, that beloved teacher was there to save him. And I don't know.
Yeah.
And he had about 3 lines of criminal plays.
Yeah.
He did. It's like. The dog, what did he say anyway? We're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're not there yet.
Not even near it yet.
So, okay.
Especially we're kind of near it.
All that back and forth with the owl, that everything in this book, suspense with Moody saying, no, you have not been explained. And banging a stick in the world stick.
I love that stick. I wish I had a stick. It's like the easy button from Circuit.
It is.
Staples.
That was easy. Says Moody.
He bams that stick a lot in this movie, but I don't know. Did she say the line, you could lose your buttocks with the wand?
No.
Oh,
no,
that would have been good.
Not about the buttocks.
I don't like that line.
Except there was this weird, like, close-up of Tonks, don't call me Nymphadora, and, like, she's going to explode.
Yeah.
Completely overdone. But it was fun.
That's fun. We like that. Those are book things. We like the things.
Well, I do like the scene, the shot, though. I will...
It's an odd delivery, but
I mean,
okay. I have to say... I'm not really one to ever be down on any of the actors in these films, but I just don't, out of all the characters they've ever casted, I just do not buy her as Tonks. She's a very talented actress, and she's done probably loads of other great things, but I look at her, and I just don't see the Tonks that I've been picturing in my head since I've read Phoenix.
Well, we did get a description of her face in Phoenix. Like a tomato-shaped or a heart face, or at one point it was heart-shaped or something like that.
Well, she's just one character that when I read it and when they said that, you know, she was the last person, you know, around Harry's time to be bumped up to an Auror, because, you know, she was 2 years out of Hogwarts at the time or whatever. She's supposed to be something around 19 years old or so, which puts her way closer to Harry's age than anyone else in the Order. And, I would have liked to seen somebody cast as a little, that someone that reflected that age. And that she so drastically doesn't, no offense, whoever you are, I forget your name. You don't look that old, but you don't look 19.
That fact wasn't brought up in the movie. Think about it as a contained movie. It's really not relevant.
No, I mean, as far as that, I mean, she did her job well. I just personally, and I've heard the opinion reflected through other people that she just doesn't look like the Tonks that I had envisioned when I read. And almost every other character in the film, I could say that they resemble.
I remember the day that the first image of her broke, and that was the image of her with the purple hair, and she was looking a lot more goth than I thought that a Tonks would, you know. But it worked okay. It just wasn't, like you said, people have some of your preconceived images in the book, and it just didn't really kind of match that description. But I didn't mind her too much, though.
Yeah.
I thought the interaction, that Nymphadora line really threw me off. It was so just out of place and out of character. It kind of took away from that shot, which I thought David Yates did beautifully. Actually, I thought was really cool, is when they were standing in line and they summoned their brooms. And that was purely a cinematic thing, but it was just kind of cool to see that. But then there's this line that made no sense, and it just...
Yeah. Well, the funny thing about that line in the books is that Tonks in the books is, you know, like all quirky and, you know, cute and, you know, young and goofy like that. And
she's all angry.
And then her to get angry, that's funny. That's a big contrast.
Right.
But then in the film, you ever get all angry, and then otherwise she's just, you know, a stoic, you know, fly on the wall. It's like, what's wrong with this lady? I don't understand.
I know.
There's nothing fun about you.
So what did you guys think, though, once they got their little broom thing about what happened next? That was another kind of big...
I loved it, how they just pulled them out of thin air, but I swear the first time I saw it, I thought, like, where in the hell were those brooms? Because, like, the screen was big I was watching it on. I didn't see the right side of the screen, so I, like, wait a second, what's going on? But they just appear out of thin air, which is interesting.
Well, I was very excited to see what happens next, because we had heard about, that was like one of the first like filming reports we heard about them filming along in London, along the rivers and the different areas, and I just was like, I had no idea what he had in mind, and that scene was, wow,
It was stunning. It was unreal, and it's one of those moments that I think it's okay to suspend canon, because they're flying through London. Visibly, you can tell that's London.
Yeah, they've been seen.
It's not just random clouds like it is in the books, but right in the middle of London.
Right.
Cool.
They
almost hit a ship, and they almost hit the boat captain, but maybe somebody comes around and obliterates them. Who knows? We can always assume they did.
It's just a glorious thing, and just what struck me is that it was real London, like the one that we had seen just when we were there. It's just this real London, and here are these magic people and this amazing, you know, the shot of them flying along the Houses of Parliament over the River Thames, and is that right? Thames, did I say it right?
It's Thames.
Thames.
Or Thames, right?
No, I said it wrong last time.
You did it fine.
But that shot of them like silhouetted and like Moody on his like funky broom with the leg rest. Was so sweet. You know, I love that. I still...
Yeah. I know. It just blurs by in a blur.
Yeah.
But they designed the coolest room for him. I'm just so in love with art direction in these movies. They add so many cool touches like that.
And the music to it, too. I just, you know, we hadn't really talked too much about Nicholas Hoover's score, but I just...
The score underneath that scene is one of my favorites on the soundtrack.
Melissa, what did you think about that shot? Did you like them flying along like that, or...?
Yeah, I mean... When I first saw it, I was just like, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah.
Because they're flying right past the queue. Right in the middle of London.
I know.
Everybody's seeing them. It's no statute for underage, whatever. But it was cool.
Yeah.
I guess when you're a screenwriter, you're a director, or whoever's fault it is, you're looking at the scene and going, oh, they fly through clouds. Fun. We can make that exciting, but wouldn't it be so much better?
Yeah.
So that's fun.
We can do better than that.
I guess it would be sort of boring.
Well, and it gives...
Oh, and they fly and they get...
they get to Grimwald Place.
Uh-huh.
Which, I'm happy to say, was awesome. I think that looked like total Grimwald Place. Cramped little houses. Sorry, London people, your houses are crazy small.
Mm-hmm.
But, that was one of the coolest sets that we visited, at least, and it was Grimwald Place set. And it was in pieces, and, you know, it's not all of the rooms were connected like you'd think they would be in a house. They're, you know, in different parts of the stage. But to see it all in one piece like that, and to see them walking through the entryway corridor, which is a skinny little thing, and head into the kitchen, it was... even though Grimwald Place looked completely different in my head when I read the book, which is just because it looked just like my old cottage, because when we got Order of the Phoenix, the book, we immediately went up to like our cottage to read it. So when I was reading Grimwald Place, I just kind of substituted the house I was in for Grimwald Place. So it looks nothing like the real Grimwald Place in the movie, but I can't complain that it didn't look like my cottage, certainly. So that said, awesome set. Awesome scene.
Wow.
What did you think of it, Miss?
I loved how closed in it was. How claustrophobic and gothic it was. It, filmmakers really sort of understood something about that. That gothic, dark, scary, has to be tiny, big cavernous spaces just don't work for that whole feeling.
Yeah.
I like that we started to see that Harry and Sirius relationship immediately. You walk in, you see the look on their faces.
Yeah.
If you didn't know they were godfather and son... I think there was something between them, but no, it was really, nice.
I hope people did remember that. I hope people didn't walk into the movie and be like, who is this creepy man giving Harry the looks? What's going on?
But what I love was Fred and George popping up everywhere. It's brilliant. I mean.
Oh, they were brilliant.
Yeah.
That whole scene with the expendable ear. Wasn't the ear just brilliant, that shot? And the cat was hysterical.
Crookshanks, bad Crookshanks. That was hilarious.
And they did perfectly the first thing Harry saw, because this is in the book, there was a large quantity of bushy brown hair flying at him, and that's what we see when he opens the door.
Somebody commented on something recently, it's like, why is Hermione always all out of breath and all upset whenever she sees Harry for the first time in like every book?
You know,
go through it almost every time.
Wow.
Hermione is... panicked and out of breath and just generally disheveled.
I will say this, the one thing that I had kind of hoped, and I knew that they probably wouldn't just because of the effects, but I was kind of hoping to see Crazy Mama Black screeching at him, you know?
Yeah. Well, that wouldn't have been any harder than Fat Lady effects.
But at least go ahead.
I just think about the story-wise, it would have been a real distraction. In a book, you can read about it, but somebody's screaming at the top of their lungs in a random house. It's just sort of an alarm.
Yeah.
Instead of you actually do hear her muttering filthy scum, etc.
But
it was brilliant though how they introduced Creature. Didn't say a word. We saw him for a second, you know, he was just there in the hallway, and I just was like, whoa, that was really a cool shot of him and all.
Now, what kind of lines did he have though? Because was he insulting them?
None. He said a couple later on. He was just like part of the brat who lived or whatever, but
because the Creature story arc, the relationship wise with Harry and those people, really begins with him just being a nasty, bad, you know, insulting little piece of crap. And we talked about this in a previous episode, so when he does finally come around and he's nice and cooperative with Harry, it's just so shocking and so hilarious to see him all, you know, dressed up nice and cooking pork chops. But
pork chops?
I don't know. Do you guys... I think he did cook pork chops.
I don't know. I don't remember. Okay.
I could have sworn I read pork chops. But,
in the food.
It was cool to see him nonetheless, even if he wasn't a big old jerk.
Well, that was... and I'm glad that as we later learned, that was important for him to be in there, but I'm just glad that they kept him in, and that was really cool to see them, you know?
Yeah.
Just creepy, dusty thing. I love that house. It was awesome.
For totalists. Well, we've got to stop it there, guys. This is about as much time as we put into a Phoenix file every week. Mm-hmm. We got a little more Grim Old Place left on to talk about, and I think we jump right into Harry's trip to the ministry.
Yeah. Woo!
And the ministry stuff, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah, interesting.
Harry, and I'm disappointed. We all thought he had an Oyster card to get onto the tubes,
yeah.
But we were wrong.
I love those Oyster cards.
That would have been a hilarious, great touch, and Oyster probably would have given him, like, thousands of dollars to get the Oyster card in the movie. Because, like Arthur could have done a wand magic.
Hey,
Oyster
card. Plug in my ears, plug in my ears.
Hey everybody, and welcome to another Scribby 5, and I'm Nina, or Severine Snape.
Hi Nina, and I'm Erin, or Calpius.
Hey, well for the past few weeks, we've been talking to you about all the things that our Scribulous essays had guessed right about Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, but it hasn't all been good. There were quite a few things that we'd wrong too.
Well, of course, with all the speculation that was going on, it was only natural that we'd guess some things wrong too.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I know that I definitely had some theories that didn't pan out in the end.
Yeah? Well, what was your favorite wrong theory, Nina?
I actually had this really nifty theory about the final showdown between Harry and Voldemort, because there had been so much emphasis on love being the greatest weapon Harry possessed, and about how Harry was protected by his mother's love. I thought that maybe Harry had to show Voldemort mercy in the end. I mean, mercy is a kind of love in a way. So I thought that this ancient magic that was invoked by Lily's sacrifice would somehow come full circle. A mother gives her life to save her son's life, and then the son spares the life of the man who killed his mother. So that's what I thought.
Ah, well, the idea of the voluntary sacrifice thing was still important in the end. So, you know, Nina, your theory was really pretty good. And truthfully, my favorite theory wasn't nearly as academic or serious as yours.
Which was that?
Well, I thought Arthur Weasley, in fact, I was sure Arthur Weasley would become Minister of Magic. And you know, in Order of the Phoenix, Ron is trying to fit in his Quidditch practice around all his pre-exam homework. And then he exclaims that there's no point in Quidditch practice, as he had about as much chance of winning the Quidditch Cup that year as his dad had of becoming the Minister for Magic. And, of course, they did win the Quidditch Cup that year, so I thought for sure that Arthur Weasley was a shoo-in for the Minister job.
Oh, actually, that's a really good theory, and I actually believe that Arthur should have been made Minister of Magic.
Yes, I agree.
So, what did we read in our essays that turned out not to be quite right in the end?
Well, first of all, with an average of 2 or 3 Snape essays a month, some of them were bound to get it wrong.
True, yeah. I remember this one, actually a really great essay by Andrew Cooper, that compared Professor Snape to the prince from Machiavelli. And this essay predicted that Snape would become the new Dark Lord.
Ah, and I would have loved for that one to come true.
I
had really wanted to hate him as much as he hated Harry, but alas, he was pathetic, but not evil.
Well, you know, there's nothing to stop you from still hating him. But, yeah, I do agree he turned out to be a bit pathetic in the end. And I think we should probably move on from this topic, and we'll get some really angry PMs about it. So, sticking with Professor Snape, though, does our recently departed potions master have scores of women drooling over him. Droves of women, yeah. But the poor man has also been paired with just about every available and even the unavailable females in the series. I mean, we have one really great, very memorable essay by Future Weasley called The Unsinkable Ship, and this was published in issue 12. And this essay speculates on a possible romantic relationship between Snape and Aunt Petunia.
Ah, Snape Petunia. I actually really like
Snape
that
Petunia.
Theory.
Me too.
The first time I heard of it, I was laughing my head off. But the more I thought about it, the less improbable it seemed. And Future Weasley did a great job of presenting all the evidence.
I agree, yeah. Of course, we now know that it was actually the other Evans sister that Snape was interested in.
Yes, or indeed wasted his entire life on.
Well, indeed, wasted his life on her, yes. And we are probably getting ourselves into enough trouble with Snape fans right now, so let's pick another topic to talk about.
Well, one of the most creative theories we ever had was from an essay called Harry's Secret Weapon by B. Klutz from issue 7. This author predicted that treacle would be an important weapon in defeating Voldemort. Apparently, treacle is a bit like a bezoar, and it helps against most poisons. The author speculates that treacle, which of course is often used in desserts, could protect against Acromantula poison, Basilisk poison, and even the poison in the wood of the yew tree, which Voldemort's wand is made of course.
Yeah, it was a great theory, and of course, it didn't in fact turn out that Voldemort would be defeated by treacle, which would have been great fun, but it didn't work out that way. The treacle could still have those healing powers against poisons and venoms. I mean, it was something that wasn't actually resolved in Deathly Hallows, so it could still be true.
Well, yeah, if only Snape had enjoyed more puddings, then he might still be alive today.
Yeah, well, we shouldn't make fun of my poor cousin like that.
Well, why not?
So, on a more serious note, I want to mention one more essay, and it's a great essay called The Secret of Number 12, Grim Old Place by Snitch 2006. And this author had actually made a really cool observation in the Half-Blood Prince that Dumbledore, who was the secret keeper for the Order of the Phoenix, had explained the exact whereabouts of the Order's headquarters while the entire Dursley family was listening in. So the way she presented this theory, it really seemed like Dumbledore deliberately told the Dursleys about Grim Old Place. And she hypothesized that in this way, she was providing the Dursleys with a possible safe place to hide just in case they needed to.
Well, I love that theory. I thought it was very convincing.
Me too, yeah.
I really did.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the end, of course, the Dursleys never went to Grim Old Place, so it didn't really matter in the end, did it?
No, but the Order did provide them with a safe place to hide.
Okay, yeah, then that's true. So it wasn't all wrong after all.
No, which is proof, once again, that Scribbles authors are just the smartest people on Earth.
I agree, except, of course, for the one that claimed that Dumbledore in Half-Blood Prince was really Slughorn on Polyjuice Potion, or the one that claimed that Snape had been high on Felix Felices all his life.
Hey, that was me!
I know that was you. Well, in that case, I'll just agree with your quote that scrupulous authors are the smartest people on Earth.
And on that note, that's it for this week. Goodbye.
Bye.
And now it's time for Canon Conundrums. Listen in as our panel tries to figure out one specific issue from the Harry Potter canon.
Who could possibly figure that out?
It's time for Canon Conundrums.
Yes, indeed.
Hey.
That's how we say it.
Yes.
I missed you guys last time.
Yes, John's here.
Oh, weren't you there? So what are we talking about?
Our Canon Conundrum this week is all about the biggest question. I guess the biggest question, but it was the biggest question for that chapter. Why in the world didn't Harry die in the forest?
That's right.
Now, a lot of you guys are going to say, we know why he didn't die already.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't totally obvious. It took a lot of rereads for a few people.
Yeah. Me, for one.
Yeah.
I'm still rereading, for goodness sakes.
A lot of explaining, and there's a few things we got from Joe out of the interviews about some of those things that I don't remember. I don't want to meet that. But yeah, why didn't he die?
Why didn't he die?
He got AK'd right in the face.
Mm-hmm.
He already had one freebie when he was a kid, so what happened here, guys?
Freebie.
Right, and no, there was nobody standing in front of him, you know, doing the sacrifice thing.
I know.
So.
Wormtail was already dead. Yep. He couldn't run and lunge and jump in front of the thing like we all thought he was going to.
Right.
And no Snape could
Wormtail already
him.
Choked himself.
Mm-hmm.
Nope. Snape got his head eaten off by a snake.
That's right. And there's no firebolts and no... You notice how the firebolt fell out of the motorcycle in the battle?
Yeah.
Do you know
why?
Why?
Because otherwise he would have flown the thing.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, actually, I didn't realize that. That's what kind of thought. Why did the firebolt go? Nobody even noticed. Well, that was fine. Anyway, hey, way off topic. Jumping right back. Yeah. So yeah. Hedwig couldn't even, you know, jump forward like Fox style and eat the spell. Yeah. So there's nobody left. It's just him.
It's very hard for Hedwig to do anything when she's been exploded.
Oh. No.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay. All for 37 Horcruxes. Speaking of Horcruxes, do the Horcruxes have anything to do with why Harry didn't die?
Well, Harry was a Horcrux. We know that.
Yeah, Harry had a little piece of Voldemort's soul inside of him.
Right. Harry says, you know, about this bit of soul that's in him. Has it gone? Oh, yes, said Dumbledore. Yes, he destroyed it. Your soul is whole and completely your own, Harry. So, in that sense, yeah, you could look at it and say the reason he didn't die is because what got killed was that other piece of soul.
It's like the spell came at Harry, and then the spell gets close to Harry, and the spell, like, sniffs out, like, this little piece of Voldemort's soul.
Right.
It's like, I'm going to attack this instead.
Yeah, see, that's where that kind of falls apart for me, because why? Why would it have killed that bit of soul instead of just killing Harry the way what is it with AKs and Harry? Harry just can't seem to get killed.
It's very bizarre.
Because he should have already been blasted out of the sky in the first couple of chapters there, you know? I mean, so there's all these reasons why Harry just seems to always escape the Avada Kedavra spell, but why in the forest? And see, and this is just my crazy sort of, it's not really a theory, because we can't have theories much anymore, but in some sort of weird way, it's almost like Voldemort was, in reverse, a Horcrux for Harry. Not exactly, because it wasn't like he had a piece of his soul, but with that, it's almost like the two of them, it talks about like a double protection.
Yeah.
Like Voldemort and Harry kind of have this double protection, number one being Lily's blood, which is in both of them then, and the other being this connection of the Horcrux. Well, that isn't double protection for Harry, that's protection for Voldemort, but it's kind of like, Harry's soul, by telling Harry, when the other one was destroyed, your soul is whole and completely your own, Harry, it's almost as if a bit of Harry's soul was in Voldemort. But again, I would never say that Harry's soul was ripped, but still, there's that sense of the two of them kind of, it's almost like there were mirrors, almost like that reverse spell thing going on, you know?
Well, we got the thought that Voldemort was somehow anchoring Harry down during the point where they were in the little King's Cross trippy station.
Mm-hmm.
And the only part that I read the whole time thinking, okay, that can make sense. That's logical. That makes sense. And up until Dumbledore says, you can choose to go back or you can choose to go on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, now wait a second. One or the other here, because either he's dead or he's not.
Mm-hmm.
So him choosing to go on, that action itself is what's going to kill him? Isn't that some kind of suicide?
Yeah. It's not like the ghost thing of choosing to go on or choosing to stay behind the ghost. There's almost that he would have had the choice to say, no, I don't want to keep fighting.
Yeah.
Not suicide, but just sort of saying, okay, death is now an option. It was given. But if it was an option, I'm sorry, he got hit by an Avada Kedavra, either kills him or doesn't, just like you said, John.
Yeah, so is there an inconsistency there?
But see, it's that part of Voldemort is still in him because of the whatever tie in the scar thing. That baby thing, for those that mutant kind of blob thing that was laying on the ground, is Voldemort's soul. And I think that was, like you said, was some sort of like a tether of some sort, whether it's I guess if you could look at a lifeline, like you said, to both of them. And so I don't know if I would phrase it as Harry choosing suicide, but whether Harry's choosing a path by severing that tether to Voldemort, he's choosing which pathway he wants to go, to the afterlife or back to the magical world.
Well, what Dumbledore says, I think this is, I'm looking at chapter 35 of Deathly Hallows. Harry says, how can I be alive? And Dumbledore says, think about it. And then Harry says, he took my blood. Precisely, said Dumbledore. He took your blood and rebuilt his living body with it. Your blood in his veins, Harry. Lily's protection inside both of you. And then here's the line. He tethered you to life while he lives.
Right.
So that since Voldemort's still alive, it's like you almost imagine Harry kind of flying off toward wherever death is and then that little line pulling him back. And saying, no, you can't, you still got that protection. It's just, it's nebulous.
Do you think it's just, am I just being simplistic? Because it took me a while to I really, after the first time I read this, and I remember walking around the block with my friend Sarah, and we were just talking about this, and I was really confused. I wasn't even sure if that was supposed to be Voldemort's soul laying there.
Right, I didn't catch that sure. for sure either.
You know, and it took me a while, and the more I've reread this now, I'm on my third reread, and it's just, is it just a metaphysical, just a, like a, not metaphysical, but just a way for Joe to say, here's yet another choice, even as we go? Is that, because Dumbledore says yeah. yet again, you know, and that's Joe speaking through Dumbledore, it's all about your choices. I mean, is it just,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, it just seems to me that...
It is a choice, but the
consequences. Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I don't know. I was actually pretty disappointed in this chapter, if you want to know the truth.
But I wonder, you know, and again, it's hard to figure out exactly where he is in his own mind. That's true, but Dumbledore yeah. is an actual real other person. We're not just hearing Harry's thoughts about Dumbledore here. So he is somewhere with the ethereal Dumbledore. But, you know, the idea being that Dumbledore says, well, I suppose you could go on, that doesn't mean it necessarily is true.
Yeah.
You know, he may be just playing on Harry's choice thing again, but it might be yeah. that not like Harry could have said, oh, okay, I'm out of here then. Well, and Dumbledore might have said, okay, I was kidding. I was just...
All of his dialogue was worded so carefully
mm-hmm.
in ways yeah. to make it seem
in
like...
In Joe's speech.
Harry had the knowledge all mm-hmm. on his own. Because
uh-huh.
the key thing that separates whether or not this Dumbledore image is in Harry's mind or if it's actual essence of Dumbledore coming back to impart to him is whether or not he's imparting new information that Harry didn't have.
He is. All about his history and the things with, you know, Ariana. That whole middle part where he talks about the Deathly Hallows and his quest for those as a, you know, crying about that. And so that part is new. So I think he is really Dumbledore, if you will. It's not just Harry's thoughts kind of coming together and making
yeah.
sense to him. I see what you're. That's what you're saying, right? Is that it kind of could be read as Harry just giving a personification to kind of his alter ego, and he talks himself through it.
Exactly, like his subconscious mind.
Yeah, but the whole part where he's talking about the Deathly Hallows and the things that happened, he does say some new information in there that we didn't know.
But so getting back to your point then, so meanwhile, all this is going on in this, I don't know, this way station, I don't know what you call it. I don't want to put too much of a Christian basis on this, but this whatever, this temporary zone between heaven and hell or whatever. The thing that's keeping Harry going in that point is actually Voldemort. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, if you want to read that one part correct.
Yeah.
See, that's where I almost feel like Voldemort is a horcrux for Harry, to use the word real loosely. I mean, not
yeah.
technically.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
the idea that because of the blood protection, Voldemort is what's tethering Harry to life. And Harry is,
yeah.
is not dead, even though Voldemort hit him with the AK.
Yeah.
He is not dead because actually Voldemort is still connected to
so
him.
So that's what's keeping
and
him
it's
alive.
Not just the soul bit. Because the soul bit
it's
actually is, yeah, it's the blood. The soul bit is that crying baby that, you'll notice that as the chapter goes on, Harry cares less and less about that crying baby to the point where he just kind
yeah.
of doesn't even notice anymore.
Let's shut that thing up.
Yeah.
But what makes it also more complicated is that there are three different sorts of complicated magic.
Right.
That we have to contend with here that is new to us and we don't quite understand fully. And it's one, of course, the horcruxes, what happens when they're destroyed,
mm-hmm.
what are they used for, what's their function. Number two is the blood connection and the whole Mr. Blood stuff. And then you have the Deathly Hallows and the Elder Wands
mm-hmm.
and what happens when you try to battle a wand that supposedly can't lose.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have all those three different things floating around in your head, it's very difficult to figure out exactly what's going on, and
yeah.
I think that, you know, that's for a good reason, but I do think that it's the blood
yeah.
of Harry that is what's tethering him with Voldemort to life, but I also think the more, a second time I read this chapter, I know a lot of people were kind of wondering about, well, how long was Harry really gone?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it was an instant.
But you'll notice that Voldemort was knocked out, too. You realize that?
He was knocked out, but I don't think he was passed out
no.
for a 10-minute
right.
conversation
no.
with Harry and Dumbledore.
I think you're right.
That
I think it's
happened
just
in a flash.
Just a split second. But here's one more thing, and this is something which kind of it just goes to what you were just talking about, John, this whole back to the blood. This is another, a little bit further on in that chapter. This is Dumbledore talking. He took your blood, believing it would strengthen him. He took into his body a tiny part of the enchantment your mother laid upon you when she died for you. Now, here's where it kind of gets interesting. His body keeps her sacrifice alive, and while that enchantment survives, so do you, and so does Voldemort's one last hope for himself, which is what?
His act of remorse, right.
He still has that chance for remorse. It's almost like Lily's sacrifice is so good that it keeps the possibility of good alive in Voldemort. The idea that even at the end, he could be good, which is why Harry, at the very end, what does he say to him?
You
still have one more chance, buddy. Remorse.
Isn't that wild? Oh. Just how powerful that was.
Is it incredible?
He ripped his soul into pieces. Yep. Yeah, that connection, that magic in that, and his blood there was strong enough to give him what yet again another choice, and he presented me with the opportunity to choose otherwise. Right. He chose
That ultimate last moment.
Oh, it's just so amazingly, just so philosophical, and your principles and religious and all these things. And I was astounded actually that Harry still was able to find that within him. And that she gave Voldemort this option still at the very end, that she had this character who was so vile, so evil, just the embodiment of evil, that there's still that chance of redemption. I was so struck by that, and I didn't know if that was actually magic. And the idea that she took these great philosophical, religious concepts and put them into magic just staggers me.
Well, hell. I mean, Harry dying for everybody.
I right away thought of the thief on the cross.
Right.
Exactly. And, I mean, he is, you know, dying for everybody's sins, you know. And even to the point where it's like Voldemort faces him and is given, you know, at pretty much the end of his life, the choice to, you know, choose good or choose bad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and you know what? I just thought of something. Sorry, I'm out of nowhere. Grindelwald lies to Voldemort,
who
then kills him, and the comment is made that he felt remorse later in life. Grindelwald is almost like what Voldemort could have been. And I'm not talking about a wretched man in the top of a tower dying in a prison so much as not dead. I mean, yes, ignored. Yes, forgotten. Yes, nothing anymore. But think about that. It mentions the actual word that he felt remorseful late in life.
It's a big word, remorse, because the other big time we hear it is Hermione explaining how the only way to recombine your soul once you've split it is to show remorse for your actions. So it's like Harry was offering him, you know, you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. If Voldemort did show remorse, that could have killed him too. Because it's supposedly so painful of a thing to try to, you know, for that ripped off piece of a soul to show remorse, it could be enough. Well, granted, his Horcrux is already destroyed at that point.
So you want to know one more place where the word remorse comes in?
Yeah.
Where's that?
Harry.
What?
He says, and this is from the end of chapter 6, he says, Harry watched, this is talking about Molly, Harry watched as she waved her wand near the washing line and the damp clothes rose into the air to hang themselves up. And suddenly he felt a great wave of remorse for the inconvenience and the pain he had given her.
Oh, wow.
I mean, this is Harry.
Yeah.
Harry is filled with remorse for something like that, for the inconvenience and the pain. And again, I think that was an intentionally chosen word. I think she knew that when she got to the end, she was going to be talking about remorse, and she wanted to show that Harry is
capable.
I don't want to use the word perfect, but
Harry
all the way through shows the qualities that Voldemort lacks and what makes him, even given the chance at the end to do it.
So here's my thought. So maybe this is just too far out there, or maybe it is already implied and I'm just being obtuse, but did Harry's ability to choose the right path to go back, did that give him some added magic, some added power?
You mean after the King's Cross chapter?
Yes.
Well, you know what I don't quite get? I caught this one of the times through, is he says something to Voldemort about, did you notice how your magic doesn't affect anybody?
Yeah.
It was the fact that he made the sacrifice and his love sacrifice for the whole school. Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden he did the mom thing for the entire castle.
Exactly.
So I've been meaning to go back and read through and see, but like when he lights Neville on fire, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, before that, doesn't he do a Cruciatus on him? I have to find it. See, now I'm showing that
and
I don't know where
all of
absolutely everything is.
Silencio spells didn't help.
Right.
That was why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's an interesting comment that he says, didn't you notice that your spells don't work? And I remember when I heard that at one of the times through, I thought, oh, that's weird. It seemed to me like he was doing some stuff.
Wow.
Work, but not in the way that they're supposed to. And certainly, Neville certainly didn't burn to pieces. And I'm sure if Voldemort wanted to keep a Silencio spell on a bunch of kids, he could do it no problem if he had his full magic. But they were protected from Harry's sacrifice.
You know what? I was thinking that Voldemort did a Cruciatus on Neville, but he doesn't.
No.
He comes out here, and Neville says who he is, or Bellatrix identifies him, and he tries to...
Yeah.
But Neville just says, so what if I am? You show spirit and bravery. I'll join you when hell freezes over, says Neville. Dumbledore's army, and then there's a big cheer.
Right.
Voldemort says, very well, and the sorting hat comes flying down. Now, that was a little bit of a gimme, okay, that all of a sudden the sorting hat, Voldemort thinks to use the sorting hat, and hey, doesn't the sword come out of the sorting hat? You know, that was a little bit of a gimme. But anyway, it's just, you know, Voldemort, could you be stupider? I mean, you know, let's think about this. You know, Voldemort's there and he's saying, okay, what would be the stupidest thing I could chop him to shreds, I could use Sectum Sempra, I could use all sorts of really nasty things, but no, instead, I'm going to get the sorting hat out. You know? It's like, okay. I'm sorry, I'm going into evil overlord mode now. The things Voldemort should not have done.
We are about at our time mark here already.
We're on a roll. Okay, I'm sorry.
I know.
I'm actually demonstrating my superior knowledge of Deathly Hallows.
Yes, you are. It's unfair.
You know, I'm sorry. I deserve to have credit for the fact that when I need, I'm sitting here with a big, thick copy of the Scholastic version, and I needed to know where that was, and I turned to the chapter 6 and found it just like that, and I should be proud.
You should be proud.
We're going to call you Quick Fingers.
I should like do something like a lexicon or something.
You think?
Nah.
I wonder if anybody has bought the domain already. LOL. Pretty good, guys. I think I know a little better why Harry didn't die.
It's just so fascinating to keep going over these
topics. It is. That's exactly right, Sue. It's just this topic. These kinds of topics are so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, one of the cool things we're going to be doing soon with Pottercast is going through it bit by bit, either a chapter at a time or a piece of a chapter at a time, but we'll go through it sequentially.
Oh.
And make sure not to miss anything.
Cool. Let's do it. I mean, just book 7 or are we going to do the whole dang series?
We're going to start with book 7. If people want us to go back, we can.
Oh, man. We'll be doing canon conundrums or whatever we're going to call it. We're going to be doing those for like the rest of eternity.
Yeah.
I know. Well, this is going to be a separate about 12-minute segment.
Oh, okay.
That we're going to have people...
When you say we, John, are you including me or is you just taunting me with this?
No.
What we're actually going to do is, because how crazy everybody's schedules are, we're going to try to get in, if not Steve, somebody else, be it a fan or a staff member or anybody else.
You don't want me in it, do you?
Our guest. Get out of here, Steve.
Shut up.
Yes, of course we want you in here. But Steve will not be leaving Canon Conundrums. We'll still be keeping Canon Conundrums. But for the Phoenix Files and for the new Canon, whatever we're calling it, bit by bit.
Hello, hunks.
We're going to have the same person. That'd be fun. we're going to have a guest host for both of those segments,
mm-hmm.
and it should be super cool. And I'm sure Steve will be that person numerous times.
Yay!
That'd be cool.
Anywho, let's push on to what I think is the wrap-up.
Oh, yes, we got to do a proper wrap-up, don't we? Okay, so why didn't Harry die in the forest?
Well...
Easy answer? Because Voldemort missed.
Yeah, he missed.
Yeah.
That wasn't it.
Voldemort doesn't miss.
He went wide, no.
Mr. Blood is why he didn't die.
Clunk.
I can just see him shooting off AK after AK, and one of the giants keels over, dang it. You know, Death Eaters are falling. Dang it. Okay, I'm sorry.
Bad one.
I'm off on a... Okay.
Well, it's the mutant claw, baby. It's the protective shield or whatever. But,
yeah. That's, well, it's the blood. Are we wrapping up or are we just kind of wrapping?
I think we're already done.
Well, I think it's like it says, it's the blood is like a tether that keeps him alive, but I think there's a lot more to it than that. Like you were saying, there's like multiple magical things happening at once.
Amazing.
And I think we've scratched some surfaces, and I think it needs more scratching.
We'll be scratching them again, I'm sure.
Cool.
All righty, guys.
All right.
We'll see you next week with more Canon Conundrums.
Bye.
Looking forward to it. See ya. Bye.
Great show, guys.
That's an awesome show.
I don't know, that why didn't Harry die in the woods? We have to talk about that again so I can join.
Oh, we're going to talk about all this again.
So if a Harry dies in the woods and nobody's there to see it, does he does he kill a Horcrux?
I know, for real.
And, you know, it's so hard not to want to go off on the blood tangent, and the whole thing is just...
Well, Mr. Blood, I'm waiting to put that back into the show, because I'm waiting for the Mr. Blood montage that someone needs to create and go back and listen to all the shows we talked about Mr. Blood and...
You and Mr. Blood.
I would, if I had, like, a good afternoon on my hands with nothing else to do, which will never happen, I'd go through the shows and go listen through all the episodes and pull all of the random noisms. Somebody put them into a Leaky Lounge thread the other day.
Wow.
But no, they did, too. Have you seen this thread?
No.
All the random stuff that he said over the course of a year and a half or 2 years or whatever that has turned out to be correct.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It's scary.
I mean, it's impressive in that in the sense of putting them back-to-back like that, but really, for every one of those that's true, there's like four others that were utter nonsense.
Yeah.
Four.
four or ten.
You're talking about like 20 moments over 2 years.
Wow. Yeah.
So, you know, but seriously, no, it's amazing.
True.
Like, at one point you said that Voldemort was going to float.
Yeah, Voldemort could hover or fly or something. Or, and then
I
did contend for a while that Kingsley was going to be the most, you know, the next most likely person to take over the Order after Dumbledore. And I think I caught a lot of disagreement when I brought that up in the one show.
Well, how about this? If somebody does, not just John, but anything that's been said over the past however long podcast, 2 years now, that has turned out to be correct in Deathly Hallows, if you make a montage, you'll get, we'll give you,
I'll
we have
send
some podcast
you a,
t-shirts
one of my own
around.
T-shirts, yes.
We have podcast stickers lying around, we have lots of stuff. Somebody sent us, what would Melissa do bracelet? Serious, like, for real.
I wore it for a weekend before I realized that I still had it on.
No.
I was wondering why I was yelling at so many people.
I'll send you that. I have so much. I have an Order of the Phoenix bookmark. I have so much stuff. You'll get a big pack of stuff in the mail.
Big pack of stuff.
All, like, there's little clips of people. It doesn't have to even be the three of us, even guests or whatever.
Yes.
Modcast, Scribby Fives, anyone who said something that turned out to be correct. And you can use the transcripts from our lovely transcription elves.
Yay for the elves!
To help you. That'd be a big help to
Thank
find.
Thank God,
you know?
We have those transcripts elves. Jeez, this is a perfect opportunity to dig into them.
So much fun to listen to that clip.
Well, guys, speaking
Tom,
of canon...
Well, speaking of canon, now that you're official canon, do you think John Dawlish's birthday will be this weekend, too?
No, I would just probably die of all sorts of everything if...
if Dawlish showed up on her.
Happy birthday, Dawlish, September 7th.
That would be, like, the coolest thing.
I just don't think that...
I don't think she
she's
has...
She's got that much of thought process to spare on me, but who knows? I'm sure... hell, I'm not sure of anything, but I'm still holding out for that darn encyclopedia.
Oh.
Well, it's going to be the lexicon, right?
It is. It will be in the lexicon, according to Mr. Steve. I don't know if it's there yet or not.
So what are you doing for your birthday?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, I'm getting to be an old man here, so...
Yeah.
Nothing too exciting. Now, the lovely Miss Bree and I are probably going to go find some dinner, and...
Please say it's not at Chipotle, please.
Go to Disney.
We're not going to Disney tomorrow. We're going to Disney next weekend.
Sounds great, John.
Wow, thanks so much.
I wish I could be there, but I did get a big helping of John Noe last week.
Yes.
That's right.
Oh my God, we have a funny story to tell, don't we?
Yeah, it is pretty awesome.
You want to tell it?
Sure, well, I'll start. We went to go see Rent.
Oh.
Because I'd never seen it with John.
Yes.
And my friend Anthony is back in it right now. Him and Adam Pascal are reprising their original role, so John and his sisters were excited to go see it, so we went. We had tickets, but with Rent, you go and you do a lottery. This is the Broadway show, in case nobody knows. You go and you do a lottery, you put your name in, and all these people put their names in, and if your name gets called, you're allowed to buy one of the tickets in the first two rows for
$20. You gotta buy two tickets.
Wow.
Two tickets, if you win. We put our names in, and there's like 100 people standing around, and we're thinking, yeah, okay, whatever, they're gonna call 20 people's names. There's, you know, there's just no way. First name that gets called. John Noe.
John Noe!
No way!
There's four of us, so we need two wins. Second name that gets called.
I got two tickets right there.
Right. Second name that gets called. Melissa and Ellie. So we're jumping around.
Out of like 200 some people, mind you.
Wow.
So for
the first two people that be called.
Well, all sorts of excited, right? This is fantastic. So
we're freaking out. My sister's crying and everything.
Yeah, it was
She's
really
all
great.
Just cloud nine.
So then we turn around and some girl comes out of the crowd. She goes, John and Melissa? We're like, yeah. She's like, I was listening to podcasts the whole way up here.
Podcast listeners.
Yeah.
In the Rent lottery.
So she would have never known that we were there if we hadn't have won that lottery, you know? And she said that she turned around to her friend and she was trying to convince her friend why she listened to Pottercast, like, the whole way up there. And then we just ended up being, she had no idea. You know, it was funny.
Crazy.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was cool. Thank you, Beth, for making us feel like rock stars outside of Rent.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
But that's so cool. So how was it seeing it that close for you, Melissa? Had you ever seen it that close?
You know, it was shades of 10 years ago because I hadn't seen it in that close in that theater for 10 years. It was weird. It was completely freaky. What about, but John, you've never seen it that close.
I did see it that close. We won the lottery before, actually.
Oh, well, finally.
But, no, we never seen it with Adam and Anthony, though. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
They did very good. It was a very fun weekend. I think there's some pictures floating around their Facebook already.
Yeah, your sister puts them up.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, too fun.
Yeah, so much fun.
So, what about next week, though? We got a lot of new stuff coming. Actually, not a lot of new stuff, but starting next week, we're having a new segment all about Deathly Hallows already. Just because we decided that we don't talk about Deathly Hallows enough. I don't know. But this segment is going to be, actually right now, just in our notes, it's called Deathly Hallows Bit by Bit, but it's only because we wanted to give ourselves some flexibility and how much of it we talk about every week. But the idea is, so we don't miss anything, we're going to talk about it, a chunk at a time, sequentially, starting from the very beginning.
Yay.
So next week, we're going to pick up from the beginning of the book, going to the Malfoy house and seeing Voldemort again, and do about a 12-15 minute chunk of it and pick it up every week afterwards. But the cool thing we want to do with this, actually, probably going to start with Steve for next week if he's around, but we'd like to have a guest host, which includes any fan out there, any fan, any staffer, even hell, anybody who can record themselves like we do, using Audacity or using anything, any other way that they can record themselves with us using Skype and send them their files. That makes you eligible. All that and having something interesting to say. So what that will entail is you'll be recording the 15-minute Deathly Hallows bit by bit with us, as well as the Phoenix Files. And that should be super cool. It's going to be a new person each week, and it's just going to be a cool way to get fans on the show for longer than their one-minute voicemails, like we do sometimes with the mailbag. But if you're interested in that, send us an email and your Skype name involved with that email, and just, you know, a 10-second snippet proving that you can record yourself properly.
And that you have something interesting to say about the book. So
exactly.
Do some sort of theory or some commentary, anything. Sort of like a little audition.
Yes, well, and also we will tell you ahead of time what we'll be talking about. We can tell you hell right now. Like I just said, we'll be talking about the bit by bit. Will be the first chapter, pretty much, of Deathly Hallows, and the Phoenix Files shall be Harry's return journey to school and meeting Luna Lovegood on the thingy-majigger, the Thestermobile.
They're called Thestermobiles.
So, if you're interested in being a little guest host with us and you want to record with us, give us that email. We usually do it on Wednesday nights or Thursday nights, so you need to be around Wednesday night, Thursday night, Eastern times. So,
cool.
Check also the Pottercast blog. We're setting up the Pottercast acting troupe.
Yes, very exciting.
Like we talked about in a previous episode, we're going to try to do it for reals. More information about how to audition for that troupe, including where we're going to be getting the script from, will be posted to the Pottercast blog within the week as well.
I have some more little news. Keep an eye on Leaky for an announcement in the next 6 weeks about this year's Get a Clue charity drive. It is set to be our most special.
This sounds like it's cool as hell.
It does.
Yeah, I'm not announcing it yet, but when we do, it's going to be
coolest
pretty,
ever.
Pretty awesome. Also, I just got an email from our friend Abby. Do you remember when we did Habitat for Humanity in New Orleans?
Oh, sure.
Our friend Abby is up to organizing something else that she's wanting to do, and they are putting on this whole thing in Missouri called the Rockstock Spooktacular.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
It's a rock with a W. W-R. W silent. Rockstock. And it's Wizard Rockers. It's like 13 bands for, like, Draco and the Malfoys, the Remus Lupins, Wobbling Willows, the Parcel Mouse.
Wait, is it the Remus Lupins or Remus and the Lupins?
The Remus Lupins.
Which
Remus
one is that?
Lupins.
Alex.
Remus and the Lupins is... No,
the
Remus
real
Lupins
one?
Is Alex.
Got it. Okay.
Anyway, there's like 13 bands playing, and it's a whole weekend of craziness. So We're gonna post the directions onto Leaky so that you can. It's a little bit of a complicated ordering process, but basically you have to call this lodge and make a room reservation and then get your ticket. We will put the directions for getting a ticket on Leaky and on Pottercast. So all the proceeds to this event go to benefit the Harry Potter Alliance as they get their charity and their activism wing set up. So it's a really good cause and it looks like a fun weekend. So if you can go, you know.
Hells yeah.
A lot of great
October
bands.
26th, 27th, 28th.
Mm-hmm. Great bands, great music. I mean, Oliver Boyd's even going to be there. There's going to be a lot of great
mm-hmm.
bands.
Yep.
What about the Ministry of Magic?
Oh, they're
I think they're there.
They're cool. Have you heard their music?
Are they going?
Are they going to be there?
I don't think so.
They just covered Harry and the Potter's This Book Is So Awesome.
I heard it was pretty good.
It is.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
I heard that on somebody's MySpace profile, and I'm like, what? That's so cool. That's what makes me laugh.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be there, but they're really good. They do. There's so many great bands out there now. It's amazing.
Have they ever done any live stuff?
I don't think
what?
So. I haven't heard them.
I don't know why I'm asking you.
Ministry of Magic has done lots. So here's the list. It's Draco and the Malfoys, the Whomping Willows, the Remus Lupins, Catch Love, Tom Riddle and Friends, Ministry of Magic. The
Quaffle
Kids.
Friends. There you go.
I've never heard of that. That's hilarious.
The Quaffle Kids, DJ Luna Lovegood, the Cedric Diggorys, the Hungarian Horntails, Oliver Boyd and the Rememberalls, Justin Finch Fletchley and the Sugar Quills, and the Parcel Mouth.
Nice.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty awesome. You can check out more about that at stlouisareawizards.com/rock, WROCK.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like fun to me.
Cool. All right, people.
All right.
We got to get the tails out of here.
Out.
Howdy 5000.
All right.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Keep your eyes on Pottercast.com. Till next time, keep twiddling those dials.
The next password will be Badger.
Keep each other safe. Keep faith.
Good night.
We've missed it.
Dobby is free.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.
This week's Pottercast was produced by the Pottercast Trio and Steve Bonnet. The show was edited by Steed, Hildy, Samantha, and Liz. Thanks to Steve Vanderark for joining us for Canon Conclusions. Thanks to our Scooby 5 team, Aaron and Nina. And thanks, as always, to our awesome transcription elves for transcribing this and all our other episodes on Pottercast.com. For more information about the show and how to contact us and be a part of future episodes, visit Pottercast.com.